Welcome to Pemba On Demand, Physician Leaders Making a Difference. I'm Norm Chapin, your host. Pemba On Demand is produced for physicians seeking professional development. We discuss a wide range of topics on the podcast, including successful innovations in a variety of healthcare disciplines, current issues in healthcare career development, and healthcare leadership. I will be interviewing physician leaders from the U.S. and from other countries, most of whom graduated from the Physician Executive MBA program at the University of Tennessee. The information provided in this podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute professional advice. The views and opinions expressed by the host and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the University of Tennessee or any other organization. By listening to this podcast, you acknowledge and agree to these terms. Whether you're sipping your morning coffee, commuting to the hospital, or just looking for a dose of inspiration, we've got you covered. We hope you will take full advantage of these practical, insightful, and relevant discussions designed to help physician leaders get new and build upon existing leadership skills and perspectives. Pemba On Demand will allow you to be an even bigger force for good in healthcare. A quick question before we get started. At any point in your medical training, medical school, residency, fellowship, doesn't really matter, did anyone sit you down and teach you how to read a financial statement, how to evaluate a contract, how to understand what it actually means when a private equity group has an interest in your practice? If you're like me, the answer is no. Nobody taught us that. We spent a decade learning to be excellent clinicians, and somewhere along the way, the financial and business side of medicine just got handed to us, and we were expected to figure it out. And many of us, to be honest, are still figuring it out. That's exactly what today's episode is about. I'm sitting down with three people behind a course called Finance for Physician Leaders, offered by the University of Tennessee Haslam College of Business. David Maslar is a finance professor and the academic director of the full-time MBA at Haslam. His research is in market microstructure and asset pricing. David has received multiple teaching awards and is a real moving force behind this new course. David McMillan is the president of PYA, which is a healthcare consulting and accounting firm based in Tennessee. He has 30-plus years advising health systems, physician groups, and hospital boards on strategy, mergers, valuations, compensation plans, and, well, you name it. And Jim Rosenberg is a lecturer and director of corporate engagement at Haslam. Jim is a former consulting firm founder and someone who spent his career at the intersection of mission-driven leadership and financial sustainability, which is really the tension this whole course is built around. We get into a lot in this conversation. I'm glad you're joining us. Here we go. Well, good evening, everybody. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me on Pemba On Demand tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. I've been looking forward to this for some time. So I thought I'd start out with allowing each of you to kind of tell us a little bit about yourself. Dave Maslar, you have a PhD in finance and come from a background in applied mathematics and economics. And now you're the academic director at Haslam College of Business at their full-time MBA program. And it struck me that that's not a very typical career path. What was your pull towards academia over industry?
I think it starts with just love of learning and being as a faculty member, being in a very privileged position to be able to help create new knowledge, help disseminate new knowledge, and effectively engage with new learning at all times, whether it's in the classroom, whether it's doing research, whether it's reading, writing. It's just a privilege to be able to do that.
And how long have you been involved in teaching? How long have you been drawn towards that?
So I have, as you mentioned, I have a PhD and two master's degrees. So I started teaching, it was actually my senior year as an undergrad, as a teaching assistant. I really enjoyed that. And I will actually take a little bit of a step back. My first degree before PhD in finance, master's degrees in economics and applied math, my first degree is actually in theater. So it's a very different path, which sort of brought me to academia in the finance discipline. And so maybe some of my love of teaching goes back a lot further than just being in the classroom specifically. But I've been at UT for 10 years now. I was at the University of Missouri before that, completing my graduate degrees. And there is where I really started developing my teaching portfolio.
Great. Well, thank you again for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having us.
So next we have David McMillan, and David is the president of PYA and was nominated by Forbes as the best in state certified public accountant in 2026, fairly recently. And David, you started your career very differently in financial statement auditing and have ended up spending the last 30 years advising healthcare organizations on strategy, valuation, numerous different topics. How did you get drawn into the healthcare arena?
Well, for those who are old enough to remember when there were auditors with busy seasons and then times throughout the year where you weren't as busy, during some of those lulls in the schedule, we would often serve our clients with needs that they had. And in our case, because I had been helping some hospitals and health systems through some financial statement audits, that included going to the debt market at times. And as they would go to the debt market, they would need financial forecasts and things of that nature, or they would need help producing those internally. This is back before there were really decision support departments and things like that. And so during some of the times where we weren't so busy auditing, we were, you know, in essence, helping do some functions that now are considered to be internal. And during those experiences, I found I really enjoyed the creativity and that came along with model construct and strategy modeling and things of that nature. And that really sort of launched me on a path of working with these health systems through things that required financial analysis of that nature, which included not just strategy, but transactions, often things of that nature. And so followed sort of the opportunities. And that's really how the career path progressed. I was fortunate to have great mentors and great clients who gave us as a firm and me as a young professional great opportunities.
Great. Well, thank you. And I mentioned briefly that this year, 2026, you received the Forbes Best in State CPA Award. Congratulations on that. What does that recognition mean personally and professionally in the industry?
Well, first of all, I think there are a lot of people who are worthy of an award of that nature. So I count myself not only in good company with those who received it, but I know that there are many others who deserved it as well. For me personally, though, the thing that I probably take the most or feel the most gratitude about is because it's an award that you receive after nomination from your peers. Mm-hmm. And so knowing that it was a peer recognition, I think is particularly special because you realize maybe in some way you've been helpful, you know, to the profession and to the industries you serve. So really grateful. Also know that I'm fortunate to have people who spoke up on my behalf.
Well, thank you also for joining us. I'm sure your schedule, as all of you must have very busy schedules. I appreciate you taking the time to come on the podcast. So next we have Jim Rosenberg, and Jim is lecturer and director of corporate engagement at the University of Tennessee Haslam College of Business. And Jim, you have your MBA. You've been working in consulting firms that you founded in DC, and you've had collaborations with Harvard, Stanford, other educational institutions, all centered on executive education. And now you're at Haslam, leading corporate engagement, working with healthcare leaders. What connected those dots? How did you get interested in focusing your career in this area?
Thanks, Norm. At the foundation, at the base of things, I like helping people think through complicated questions and find answers, especially when the answers help people grow and feel more fulfilled in their work and in their lives and have a positive impact in the world. And I think those threads have always been woven through my work. And I love being here at the college, you know, working with physicians and healthcare organizations, is that it really brings all those threads together, the complexity, the challenges, and the impact on the world around us.
Great. One of the things that I was interested in is, as we talked in preparation for this, is
kind of the expertise that you've developed in helping organizations balance mission-driven impact with financial sustainability. And this is a challenge I deal with in my job daily. It's just a constant struggle. So the mission versus the margin, how do you frame that tension in the classroom and do it in a way that doesn't make physicians feel like they're selling out for finance?
Yeah, I think that great clinical work and financial sustainability aren't really in opposition. They're often presented that way, right? We often talk about them that way. You know, that idea that to have one, we have to give up the other. But I think a lot about, you know, we talk about the quadruple aim in healthcare, right? It reminds us that we work on comprehensive solutions, great care, great patient experience, great provider experience, and affordability. So when we talk with physicians, you know, we talk about the challenge of providing great care that is also sustainable, right? That the goal is to be a great resource to the community now and in the future. And that the goal is to not just help this patient, but to do that work in a way that allows us to keep going, that requires us to be just as creative about the financial challenges, the operational side of healthcare, as these physicians are about the clinical side and the treatment side.
Right. Thank you. So I want to pivot right now and talk a little bit about Finance for Physician Leaders, the course that you're all involved in at the University of Tennessee. And I want to kind of set the stage a little bit and give you an opportunity to share with the audience why a course like this, specifically focused on finance for physician leaders, needs to exist. Is this different than an MBA level finance course? Does it have a different audience? What sets this course apart? And David, maybe I'll let you start.
Sure. Actually, building on exactly what Jim said, I think it's a great starting point. And I think it's the difference, that tension that you oftentimes feel, the mission versus margin, as opposed to maybe mission through margin. And I think that's really the story. The idea there is, I think in any setting, talk about it in an MBA class, you're going to have an organization, and that organization is going to have multiple stakeholders. And when you work through problems and think through the impact that decisions have that are made within the organization and how it affects different stakeholders, in sort of a traditional MBA setting, mostly focus on, say, a shareholder maximization, wealth maximization type of story. You think about the bondholders, you think maybe about your supply chain. And what's unique and fascinating and challenging, of course, in the healthcare space is the fact that you have patients and the community. And the stakeholders that we have are very, very different. And it's spread out in a way that is challenging to be able to consider all of these aspects simultaneously. And I think to exactly what Jim was saying before is to take a little bit of a pressure off of that, to say that it isn't an either or type of scenario here, where we want to make sure we're making the margin in order to be able to help serve patients in the future. We break this down and we say, at the end of the day, we think, you know, who owns retained earnings and things of that nature as it relates to sort of shareholders' equity. But when we think in a nonprofit context, how do we think about questions like that? Mm-hmm. And yes, we make a margin, but we make a margin because we want to be able to continue to serve the community at points in time in the future.
Great. Thank you. David, what is your take on that?
Well, remember, I was fortunate to be asked to be a part of this. So these two gentlemen are the ones that really conceived of it. But a note here about PYA, because it's relevant to this question. While we're fortunate to have clients across the country, we were founded here in Knoxville, and we were founded by two UT alum. The relationship with the University of Tennessee is strong and only growing between our firm and the university. And so we're always looking for ways to work together. Mm-hmm. So when this opportunity presented itself, it fit, you know, really hand in glove with many of myself and my colleagues' experience working in healthcare, as our firm does. And we could see, not only we've seen in practice the need for this, but we could also see how our experiences could help to maybe enhance some of the academic perspective with actual application from real examples. And so what I really was able to do, and what really the reason I think the course is so fascinating, is it is, of course, intersecting with a very acute need, which is the need for providers to be involved in the broader conversation about care, just as Jim mentioned before, with the triple or quadruple aim, whichever aim you want to focus on. So the need is obviously there, but healthcare from a provider perspective has evolved enough that providers don't go necessarily kicking and screaming into those conversations. Most of them come now out of school, whether they're earlier in their career or later in their career, with a desire to be a part of those conversations. And so when the need is there and the desire is there, it's just a matter of saying, okay, we're going to offer the opportunity. And that's what this does. It offers the opportunity in a way that the providers can consume that's consistent with the availability that they have, the schedules that they keep, which are often very demanding, and in a way that they hear relevancy in the course of the conversation. So it feels like it's something that was sort of meant to be. It just, we had to find the right circumstance and the right moment for it to sort of emerge.
Thank you. Jim, I wondered if you could handle this question. You know, it takes physicians over a decade to completely finish their training cycle, and they spend a lot of time learning how to interpret clinical data, but really get very little formal training about true financial information. I'm not even considering balance sheets or things like that or income statements, but a lot of people come out of their residency training and they don't even understand how the billing system works in the United States. I mean, they might have been taught how to code and choose some codes, but there's a huge gap between the business side of medicine and the clinical side of medicine nowadays. Is that something that has always existed in U.S. healthcare, or is that something that is a growing divide with the last 15 or 20 years?
That's a good question, Norm. I think that the gap has always been there, but is my sense, the gap has always been there, but the importance of the gap is growing, if that makes sense, right? That, you know, it's a full-time job. It's more than a full-time job to become an excellent physician, right? And so the focus has always been on that part of the job. But in the era of medicine we're in right now and the era we're going into, we need physician leaders who can navigate all the complex challenges of, as we've talked about, sustainable and cost-effective and exceptional care. And that requires bringing together, filling that gap, or closing that gap between the financial and business side and the clinical side. So I think these demands enter a physician's world as they progress in their career, not necessarily at step one when it's all about, am I doing this right clinically? But as they keep moving forward, as they take over service lines, as they're responsible for divisions and departments. And I think it's through programs like PEMBA and through the certificate programs like the one we're talking about today, that physicians are able to gain these skills as they develop in their career, as they take on more responsibilities, and in that way, you know, can develop as fantastic clinicians and start closing that gap as leaders for the healthcare industry overall.
If I could, Norm, can I make a comment here?
Sure.
Jim's spot on everything that he said, but I think it's important to recognize that the environment's gotten much more complex when you ask how's the gap gotten so wide. If we don't have to rewind that far ago where the economic mechanics of healthcare were not that complex, it was a fairly rudimentary fee-for-service type of industry. So what I did equated to some rate that I got paid. But because we understood that particular economic model created certain unintended outcomes, we've really been in an experimentation mode now for almost 20 years to say, well, how do we create a better economic outcome that's aligned with clinical care that's appropriate and that we're rewarding good quality and things of that nature? So now every provider has to think about, well, how I get paid depends not only on what I do and how well I do it, but it also depends on what you do and how well you do it. And if I'm going to understand that dynamic and that matrix more, I'm either going to be controlled by it or I'm going to lean into it so that I have a voice in it. And to lean into it and have a voice in it, I have to have some basic understanding of the mechanics of it. And so that complexity also generates a need for, and sometimes I believe a desire to understand more about how the system works.
Thank you.
Yeah, if I can jump in there as well, I think the way to talk about it oftentimes is to have a physician who has the financial vocabulary and the domain-specific knowledge to be in the room, to be that voice, given the complexities of organizations as they become larger and having more components to them, that physician presence in those conversations is becoming more and more important.
Great. Well, thank you all for your perspective on that question. And Dave, I want to pivot to you now. As you see students from many different industries coming through your programs, is there something that makes physician learners unique when it comes to financial concepts? Is there something you change about the way you teach finance to physician learners?
What's really interesting about teaching physicians who are already well-established in their careers and well-established building within an organization, they are particularly comfortable with making complex decisions with very, very important real outcomes, high-stakes environment under a high degree of uncertainty. And I think that naturally translates to understanding financial forecasting outcomes and things of that nature. They have a framework, I think, which really lends itself to catching on to how moving parts, when they're starting to come together, this is the likely outcome, but we don't necessarily know this with 100% certainty. And so connecting it to sort of clinical decisions that they make, we're going to make this decision, it's going to have this effect on the finances, and knowing that there's some degree of risk involved, I have found that physicians are uniquely positioned to really understand that process really well.
Okay. David, I wonder, do you see from your years of work in healthcare and with physicians, is there a particular blind spot that you think is the largest challenge for physicians as they approach learning about finance?
I wouldn't say that there's a particular blind spot. What I would say is that, as David was just describing, there are often so many variables involved in a complex system like healthcare. Sometimes it's the patients to understand that there are many variables involved that you may not have insight into that are helping to influence that decision, and being willing to sort of hang on through the explanation or through the process of understanding those. Because again, for a lot of these individuals, there's an opportunity cost to that if they're still practicing. And it's a real opportunity cost. They're forfeiting, you know, earnings by doing so in many cases. But what I would say, as we kind of think about, well, is there a blind spot? It's like I said, there's a lot of material, there are a lot of variables. If there was one area I would point to, it's the idea that, to David's point, a lot of the decision-making that especially a trauma physician or someone's making is in the moment. And there are a lot of financial decisions that have ramifications over time. And understanding that we can make a decision today, that today, with no additional context, may not make sense. But when we put it in the context of the time value of money, or we put it in the context of a strategy over time, we can see how that decision today actually makes more sense. And that physicians are, to David's point, they're very intelligent, they're capable, and they get that when they have the time to sit and consider it. I think sometimes it's just the tyranny of the present that can get in the way. And what happens is it feels like frustration in the moment. And that frustration bubbles up and boils over, like, you won't just give me a straight answer. And the things that we all probably heard at one point or another. So that's, in my experience, what I would say is it's just hard to really almost ask enough time to get all of that context to make some of the informed decisions that have all those variables associated with them.
If I could build on that, I think that was fantastic, because when I think about that word context that David was using there, what I keep coming back to is vocabulary and the language and the idea that finance being a really important component within an organization is sort of the language of business. It's taking the time, as David was just mentioning, to be able to say, what does this term really mean? To really hone in on that, to develop that familiarity with finance as a language, I think it's a great first step, and it is one that does, in fact, take time.
Great. So, David, maybe now would be a good time for us to pivot and talk a little bit about the course itself, Finance for Physician Leaders. How did you decide on the structure, the content, and just the basic design? And maybe share with us a little bit about what the course is.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. So a lot of conversations with physicians, experience with working with like the PEMBA program, the healthcare leadership program, talking to physicians, trying to think about their needs, working with people in industry, getting a lot of feedback was sort of the starting point. At the end, we sort of started with a top-down sort of big picture approach that is looking at the organization as a whole and thinking about financial statements from an organizational perspective. And to sort of build on talking before, I think the first step is really to think through vocabulary. It's just to get familiarity with, you probably heard these terms before, like depreciation and accumulated depreciation versus accelerated depreciation. And people are already closing out the podcast. So sorry, we're not going to go too much further down the actual content side of things here. But defining those in a little bit more of a concrete terms for the purposes of being able to make them a little bit more relatable. And by taking that sort of top-down approach, sort of viewing the organization as a whole, but also constantly linking it back to when you make an operational decision, a clinical decision within sort of the realm of influence that you have within the organization, where does that ultimately show up on the financial statements? And so really trying to ground the decisions that they're making in, you know, if a CFO or a CMO is going to come out and say, we need to change this variable because it affects length of stay. Why? How do we fill in the gaps between, you know, if that's all the information I have and all the context, how do we line things up to really have a better idea? So where, again, our decisions show up in terms of the numbers. And I think the real underlying idea is the goal is never to, we're not trying to create and turn the physician into the CPA. We're not trying to make accountants out of the program. That's true in the non-degree space. It's true in the degree space as well. But at the end of the day, it's to have a better conversation with the people who are making the financial decisions and to make that conversation flow in a way that there's actionable activity that really kind of comes out of it where the physician feels much more confident in saying, this is sort of my view of how these things relate to the numbers. It really comes down to, I think, at the end of the day, the story behind the numbers, the interpretation, rather than the actual calculations themselves. The story behind the numbers, that's where actually I get excited with the material.
So Dave, thank you for talking to us a little bit about the course. David McMillan, I wonder if you could talk specifically about once there's a foundation built so that people kind of understand some of the basic concepts, that you blend in some of the real world practice areas. What areas do you tend to focus on and find the physicians value the most?
Well, what we've tried to do so far, and I think this is always subject to refinement and evolution as we learn, but what we've tried to do so far is take the lead from them. So the first group has not been shy about commenting and talking about, you know, what they have on their minds. And that's the first place to go. That's relevant to them. That's what they're thinking about in the moment. But David mentioned sort of the way the course is structured, and it gives opportunities to give examples and to provide examples around the course content that are relevant and contextual. I think what we found thus far is that the idea of understanding, and I think Dave said this earlier, helping them understand the story that's being told by the numbers, once you have that vocabulary that David's been talking about, where you can take that context, apply it to a set of financials and understand what is that story saying so that I can be a more conversant participant in this conversation, is where I think we try to bring examples to the table that allow for the translation of that story into something that they recognize and understand. So whether that's looking at concepts like gross margin, and we spent some time there, and you know, what's the difference between income and on an accrual basis and cash, which is always one of those things that feels like voodoo magic to first year accounting, you know, students until they understand it. And, you know, most of the population doesn't ever think about that. But these folks are charged with that sort of understanding. And those, you can take a handful of concepts and say, once the foundation has been laid with those handful of concepts that we brainstormed before David started putting the material together, there's just a plethora of opportunity to make application in the real world. And so we'll keep learning and listening, but we try to first take the lead from them and the things that are important to them and make that relevant in their actual practices, whatever those happen to be. And then, as I mentioned before, really helping them to be able to tease out and tell that story from the numbers is one of those things that a listener in a meeting that they may be participating in realizes pretty quickly, hey, they've got a command of this, right? Because they can tell the story. And that's just, we talk often about putting tools in their toolbox so that when they find the need, they've got the tool that they know how to use to pull out and use it in that circumstance.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. And just build on that a little bit, you know, as David was talking about that focus on relevance, that focus on application, I think there's some things that we've built in the program that help with that. You know, it's not just the curating of what content and what conversations, but how do we structure these programs to help physicians, adult professional learners make the most out of this? And I think part of it is starting by helping folks think about where are they starting from in the first place and setting their intention for the course. They're really clear, what am I trying to master? What is important to me? What's my personal goal going through this work? So that they bring their questions in the room. I think that's what David was also referring to, of us taking the lead from the participants. And then both Dave and David brought up, there's ways in which the sessions themselves are really designed to bring in that kind of deeper engagement. And I think this is where we have the advantage of live conversations, not just recorded material that folks are looking at. That's where we're in discussions, we're using cases, we're using small group breakout, you know, buzz group conversations, ways to let the participants move from being kind of passive recipients of pretty complicated, you know, information to being active in, you know, making sense of things, right? Being more the director of the experience. And then we're really encouraging, you know, at the end of every session is that question of, how are you going to try this out between sessions? What's going on in your work right now where one of these concepts applies and you can test it out and experiment with it and bring that question back the next time? So I think there's a lot of experiential process and design that goes into this as well that really comes from, you know, 25 plus years of working with physicians.
This podcast is sponsored by the Physician Executive MBA program at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville's Haslam College of Business. In less than one calendar year, this program will equip you with valuable business acumen and leadership development not found in traditional medical school curriculum. Are you ready to join the longest-running physician-only MBA program in the country and a network of nearly 1,000 PEMBA graduates? Visit tiny.utk.edu/podpodcast for information about this exciting opportunity. And now we'll return to the episode. That leads me to a couple more questions that I'd like to ask. How long has the course been offered? When was it first offered to the first group of physicians?
So talking with physicians and researching this last year, and we launched it with our first group of physicians February of this year. And we're now currently active in the second piece of the program. There's two certificates in the program, the second one being driving financial results in healthcare. And that one's just kicked off. We're live with our second group right now.
It almost sounds like, given the feedback loop that you try to establish during the course, that one course could look very different than another, depending on the physicians that are in the course, the needs that they have at the time, or multiple factors, probably.
I think that's absolutely the case. I think the goal will always be to meet the students wherever they are with their financial kind of acumen and be able to help them get to the next level and accomplish the goals. Everyone comes in with a kind of a different objective, what they're trying to take away from the course. And I think part of the process is to be able to determine exactly what they're trying to get out of it. In fact, it's basically the first question we ask is really, what brought you to the course? What are you trying to take away from it? And we have some people who say, you know, I have lots of experience. I've stepped into a CMO position and I want to keep going and keep pushing. And this has happened a surprising number of times, both in the non-degree space as well as in some of the degree programs, who will come up to me during a break and say, I'm sorry, I really don't understand financial statements. I find that fascinating because my reaction is always the same, which is, why would you? Where in your training would you have been exposed to this particular type of material? I understand why you're here. And whatever we can do wherever the student is to be able to help them get to the next level, we're going to adapt the course to be able to do that.
When I was going through the MBA program, of course, we had our organizational action plans. Is there work in the course that has the physicians doing case studies, building financial models, using financial data from their own organization, or is it a pretty standard set of work that they do that isn't really related to their own organization?
A little bit of both. I think for the purposes of kind of the interactions to make it so that we're all working with the same set of materials during our synchronous sessions, I've built out a case, sort of a fictional healthcare organization where we have their, say, that set of financial numbers where we're working through and understanding the story there. But the ask is that they then go take that and go back to their organizations and apply what they have learned. And so we do have certificates. I will say that the certificates are optional. There are some people who sort of take the class and say, I'm just here to learn. I'm just here to develop the vocabulary. I don't necessarily need to kind of complete the certificate component. But to complete the certificate, one of the asks is that you take your organization's financial information and break that down and start to apply some of the things that you learned in the sessions.
Great. And David, for you, I guess getting back to the financial skills that physicians need the most, are there two or three skills that you think physician leaders are particularly weakest in?
You keep asking these tough questions because you're asking me to judge where they're weak. And these are colleagues and friends of mine. No, I think that David made a comment earlier that's relevant, and that is, you know, why would you sort of be familiar with this? And so you can basically look at any sort of financial analysis skill and say, where would the circumstance have been where you would have either been taught or been in a circumstance through your academic training or through your practical training where you've had to really understand financial analysis at more than a rudimentary level? And the answer for many of them is nowhere. And so I don't want to sound like I'm repeating myself, but the idea that these are more than numbers and they tell a story, what's the story that they're telling and how does that story relate to what it is you're trying to accomplish is really important. When you look across the population we have private practitioners in the first group. We have folks that serve, we had academicians in the first group in academic health systems. We had folks that served in some sort of administrative role from a clinical perspective that could have been a CMO or department head or other types of that roles. We had folks who came from different types of ownership structures, nonprofit, for-profit, private equity owned. So each of those is likely hearing and seeing a need while there's a thread that you can draw through all of them. The need that they're experiencing in their circumstance is just a little bit different than the colleague next to them who's in a different circumstance. And so to David's point, trying to meet them at that point of need means that we have to talk first about fundamentals because those fundamentals transcend any of those individual circumstances. And then we have to do our best to try to help bring as much context to each of those as we can. And so when we just try to think about, well, then where are some of the areas that they really need it? Basic questions. We had a physician early in the course say, okay, I've got a question. We were talking about depreciation versus leasing and some things of that nature. And he said, we're actually about to buy some equipment. Should we buy it or lease it? And that question was a fantastic question, right? But without some more context, it's hard to answer that question in that setting. And so that gave us an opportunity to probably frustrate that one participant by saying, okay, worst answer of all time, it depends. But it also gave us an opportunity to say, here's a great question that a responsible person who's trying to provide financial advice cannot answer without additional information. And here's the type of additional information. So like anything else in life, sometimes learning to ask the questions is one of the first best skills to learn. And that was a good example of an actual question that came up, wasn't answerable in its form, but gave a great opportunity to talk about the sorts of things that you would need to know to answer that question.
That's great. I'm sorry for asking you all the tough questions. Well, tell me a little bit about what physicians or what types of physicians have you seen attracted to this first offering? Is it a fairly broad cut across the healthcare environment, or are the challenges that we're facing bringing a specific type of physician or a physician who's in a specific role to the course.
Jim and David probably, as those who did a lot of the recruiting, would have some good perspective on that.
Great.
How about Jim? Do you want to take this one?
I got it. I was going to say, you know, David, you had mentioned some of the variety, the diversity of folks that we have in this first run. I think that really is the truth of things, that we've had folks involved who are from pretty senior positions. We have folks who are starting from pretty much earlier in their career, but they see that this is an important part of where they want to be as a physician leader. We've got folks from small, you know, practice groups to very, very large health systems. And I think what that really speaks to is that in today's healthcare world, there really aren't a lot of types of physicians who don't need to understand this information, right? That they recognize they're an integral part of complex systems now. And they don't want to just be a cog, right? And I don't want to just be this wheel that turns at the bedside. I want to use my leadership skills. I want to use my insight. I want to use my expertise to craft this place, right? To craft what we're doing. And so it's been really neat from my perspective, from thinking back to the, you know, when we first started bouncing these ideas around about this program, really neat to see that being able to understand the financial conversations when they're happening around you, being able to read that report when it's dropped in front of you and we say, here, let's go, let's talk about what needs to happen here. Being able to ask the right questions when someone's saying, you know, we think you should be doing this to make your group more sustainable, and being able to pitch, hey, here's why I think not just clinically, but financially, this is a good move for what we should do in our group. It's really rewarding to see how broad those needs are and that we're able to bring in such a range of people.
And I think the only thing I would add to what Jim said, which was fantastic, is that it was fascinating to me that there were a lot of different specialties represented among that population as well. We didn't really have a concentration in any one specialty. It was across multiple specialties. And I really found that fascinating. I thought we might have more hospital-based specialties represented in the first group, because in my mind, that was maybe the population that was going to find this coursework attractive. But my goodness, the private practitioners from all sorts of different specialties that participated was not only a surprise, but certainly refreshing.
Interesting. That is interesting. I would have thought the same, that the people who were part of larger health systems would have gravitated more than entrepreneurial or independent practice owners. Interesting.
And I would also agree with that, and just to kind of build on that as well. The other division I thought was very interesting was the mix of for-profit and nonprofit, which I thought really enhances the discussions. Jim mentioned earlier, we do breakout groups, and the ability to not only connect with other people who are, you know, facing similar types of challenges, but also very different types of environments. The ability for them to share that knowledge across the sort of the different structures of the organizations, I thought was fascinating to me.
So how often is this course going to be offered? What's the current plan?
The plan right now is to present the certificates once a year. So kind of a nice pace from, you know, we were just talking about the diversity we want to bring together. We really do want to bring together a good cohort that is committed, that's focused, and that can learn from each other. We also know, again, from working with physicians for so long, how far in advance they set their schedules. And so we want to be able to put these on the calendar far enough in advance that physicians can plan for them and make time for them.
Well, let me ask another question. As this is the first really cohort that has gone through the course, and I know you talked with physicians, Dave, about to try to assess the need and those types of things. And it sounds like as you've gone through the course, you've had a wide variety of physicians come into the course. Have there been things that you have learned about the experience that the physicians have had during this first cohort that resulted in plans to add or delete certain content from the course?
While you think about that for just a minute, I'll offer something, and it may not work editing reel, but I will offer this. I think that both David and I have, when you see the material presented and you see how people react to it, you learn within the material, hey, this moved quickly. This you know,
pacing. This yeah, section, I would agree with that.
We labored a little bit through, and we could tell by body language we didn't have them where we wanted them. And so yeah. I think as we move ahead and look at the next cohort, we'll go back and look at each of those sessions and say, hey, maybe we cut this down. Maybe we give a little bit more time here. That might be the place where, because of that engagement, where we do the breakout session right then. And we started feeling that in this one. We made the comment after one particular session, wow, we felt the energy there. And we feel ourselves sort of catapulting into the next one with a lot of energy. And those things, I think, are more so than content, just how the content is being received and how to organize it and present it and prioritize it in a way that we found the recipients responding to it.
But I am intrigued by this partnership between private businesses and, you know, David with PYA and the University of Tennessee. Is this the first time there's been this type of close collaboration in a course of this type?
On PYA's behalf, real quickly, to say we've been flattered and honored to be asked on multiple occasions to present to students, to judge, be judges in certain contests and criteria happening in some of the degree programs in the Haslam College of Business. So the collaboration is nothing new. What I think may be new, at least in terms of things that I've been aware of related to the activities between the firm and the school, is this sort of guest facilitator, sort of guest presenter in a non-degree program such as this. That is something that I do believe this course represents the first instance of. But based on early results, to the extent that we find other opportunities of this nature to work with the university, I think it's something that we've seen that there's a demand for.
And Jim, what are your thoughts on that from your position?
Yeah, I'll just build on that. I think this is a unique partnership and something that, you know, we talked about in our healthcare group for a while. We've seen in some of our other programs, like the CMO Accelerator, which is another certificate program that we do, that bringing in both our, you know, deeply expert faculty, right, who work with healthcare people, worked in the healthcare space for a long time, but matching them up with practitioners, right, who are in it day in and day out and really understand the subtlety of how do these concepts and these challenges show up in the day-to-day work, creates a really powerful space for conversation. And so getting to take that to the next level and partner with PYA, with such a high quality firm, with such high quality leaders like David, I think makes for a kind of rich learning environment that is very unique. There aren't a lot of opportunities to sit down and ask your question about that professional challenge you have and hear from research, you know, based teaching expert, you know, faculty, and from senior level, you know, leaders and executives who are doing that work day in and day out.
Great. Thank you. Well, I'd like to kind of pose my final question for each of you and have you answer it in your own way. So Dave Maslar, I'll start with you. If you could bottle up one thing from this course and send it or teach it to every physician in America, what would you choose?
I think the confidence to engage with the material and to think that, you know, finance and the way that it fits in within the organization, the role that it plays there, to recognize the importance of having both the domain-specific physician clinical knowledge and the financial knowledge, I think that is so important. And to just help individuals overcome hesitation with learning and getting started with that particular process. If I could help someone get over that particular hump, that would be one thing I would hope to do that every single time.
Great. Thank you. David, how about yourself? The one thing you would choose to teach every
single time. That's a great answer. So I'd like to plagiarize it as much as possible, probably. But in addition to that, I think that what I would hope that these participants are also able to do is maybe build a little bit of a network of colleagues that they can reach out to, whether that's those of us who are helping to facilitate the course or those classmates that they find in the course. That's one of the, I think, the nice potential outcomes of the breakout groups in particular, is that once you start to hear the voice of others, and that voice becomes a little bit more personal in those breakout sessions. Naturally, you're sort of drawn to people from a personality or from a perspective, a likeness of perspective, and that you may carry on beyond the course. And so that answer of David's that was so great about the confidence to engage with the material, some of that confidence comes by not feeling alone. And if you have a bit of a network that you can reach out to, I want to run this by you. How would you think about this? I hope the participants find that ecosystem that they didn't know they had before when they're finished with the course.
Great. Thank you. And Jim, how about yourself?
Yeah, I think I'd say that thing I'd love everyone to kind of take away or be able to access is just that, I guess, that recognition, like, this kind of material, this financial material, may feel foreign, right? Like, it's a different identity, right? This isn't what a clinician does. But to have this kind of experience and to learn and see that this kind of expertise is part of your identity as a physician leader, right? It's not something for others. It's something for you. And it's physicians who are going to be central to the future of how we solve the challenges that we have in the field, right? How do we deal with the high cost? How do we deal with access? How do you deal with quality? And so taking on that identity is really powerful, to be that voice at the table, to be that leader at the table. I think that's the thing I would say.
Great. Well, I want to thank all three of you for joining us again. I mean, this has been a great discussion, great dialogue. I look forward to getting more information and feedback about how this course progresses. I'd love to have you back on in the next 6 to 8 months as you roll out sort of second cohort of this course. I think my experience with my MBA program at the University of Tennessee was just a fabulous experience, especially, and I came in as a very, very naive from a finance standpoint. And I learned so much finance. I think having a really concentrated focus like this would be a really valuable experience for physicians who are either new or have quite a bit of experience in leadership roles. So thank you for putting this course together, and thank you for joining me on the podcast today.
Thanks for having
you. Appreciate it.
Well, that's a wrap of another PEMBA On Demand. Thank you to David Maslar, David McMillan, and Jim Rosenberg for their time today and for the work they're doing to better educate physician leaders about healthcare finance. What a great conversation. If something in today's episode hit home, share it, text it to a colleague, send it to a resident who's about to finish training, forward it to the physician who just got handed a budget for the first time. This is the kind of thing that's more useful when it travels. If you're not subscribed yet, please do that now. And if you've been meaning to leave a review, it takes about a minute and it genuinely helps more physicians find the show. If today made you curious about the Finance for Physician Leaders course or the PEMBA program itself, I'll put a link in the show notes. It's the program that changed how I think about medicine, leadership, and yes, money. I'm biased, I'll admit that, but I'd do it again in a heartbeat. I'm Dr. Norm Chapin. Thanks for being here. Until next time. Thanks for listening to PEMBA On Demand. We release new episodes bi-weekly, every other Thursday. You'll find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Castos. Hit follow or subscribe to us and add us to your library. If today helped you, please leave a quick review and share the show with a colleague. Questions or comments? Drop them on our YouTube channel, PEMBA On Demand. For episode links and resources, check the show notes and visit tiny.utk.edu/PEMBA On Demand, all one word. Take good care and keep becoming a bigger force for good in healthcare.